Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Rediscovering the Joy of Learning with the Access Possibility School Teachers. I'm Christine DiDomenico. I'm a teacher and the principal of the Access Possibilities Private Online School. And today I'm joined by Ann Maxwell, our Executive Director. Hi, Ann.
Hey, Christine. Hi. Thank you so much for inviting me to be on the show. I'm so excited.
And so are we. So I just wanted to tell everyone a little bit about you. And maybe you want to add some things as well. So Anne's a psychotherapist. She's a licensed social worker. She's a child and play therapist. She speaks internationally. She was a co-author of a book called Would You Teach a Fish to Climb a Tree? And people call her a couple of titles she has. Well, she has many, many titles, but a couple of fun titles she has is the Play Lady and the Kid Whisperer. And she's been a brilliant creator with, along with some other people of our school. And she's been such a gift to me in just facilitating a lot of change for me, for the school, and for people all over the world. So today, Anne joins us to talk about creating change for kids who have been traumatized. Is there anything else you want to tell us about you before we go into the topic?
You're just going to make me cry, that's all. Thank you so much. This has been amazing. These are some of the most amazing people on the planet who get kids in a way that very few people do. And together we've created space for kids who, for whatever reason, don't fit into the regular school system, and created space for them to tap back into who they are and to learn the way they learn. And these teachers are miracle workers, you guys. They are amazing. And the stories that I get to hear about and to read about make me cry sometimes. They're just phenomenal stories. So I'm so excited to be part of this group and to be on this radio show today talking about, actually today the topic is trauma, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So now you're going to make me cry. All that.
Yeah.
So,
and Christine is,
go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, we can talk about stories about the school forever, so we'll just go.
Okay, so what can you tell us about trauma? What is trauma?
You know, trauma is, I can't even remember what the definition is, but psychologically, trauma is any event that is experienced and that creates, the perception is that it creates some kind of harm or damage to the body or to the self. They don't typically refer to it as the being, but to the self. So traumatic. So, and what's interesting about trauma is that it really is a question of perspective, right? It really is a question of how people perceive the event. There's some events that everybody would agree were traumatic, and then others that are taken as traumatic events by some, like possibly divorce of parents or a sudden move or whatever, that are taken as that are experienced with relief by other kids. Like some kids are really relieved when their parents finally divorce, they quit fighting, and they, you know, more space is created for everybody. So just that, and it really has so much to do with the point of view that kids take on. So let's talk just for a second about points of view and where kids get their points of view. Like, Christine, when you, like, where did you, like, a point of view is an opinion, right, that you have about something. Like, where did you get yours from? From whom did you get them?
A lot of them from family.
Yeah.
From
right?
society.
Yeah.
From that, the culture I grew up in. All of that.
Yeah. And there's something about, there's something in this society and maybe just on the planet right now that says that there are certain events that when they happen to people create a lasting effect that somehow is damaging and that somehow this person has to struggle to overcome, right? So there's this sense that that real damage can be done to people, and I'm not saying that it can't be, but that somehow any event that's deemed to be traumatic is something that the kid, especially the kid, but that the person is going to be saddled with the rest for the rest of their lives. And I just, ever since I began working with kids in a professional capacity, I really never found that to be true, because I watched kids change their points of view about whatever it was that had, quote, happened to them, and really get free of it and move on. So here's an example. So I worked in a residential treatment center, which, for those of you who may not know what it is, it really, like 25 years ago, 30 years ago, it really was the end of the road. So kids who couldn't live out, quote, in society, either in a family or in a group home, and who didn't meet the criteria for inpatient hospitalization or for imprisonment, like in a jail or a detention center, they were sent to these places to live. And so there was staff there, and, you know, it was communal group living, like that kind of stuff. And at this treatment center where I worked, there were also inpatient psychiatric units where kids who couldn't be contained in the residential level of care, or other kids from the outside who for whatever reason were deemed unsafe to themselves or to other people or gravely disabled, got sent. And so there was a 10-year-old that I who came onto the inpatient psych unit, quote, suicidal. And I remember, I'll just give you guys the short version of the story, but he was incredibly depressed. They put him on all kinds of meds. He and his mom had a sort of a tangled connection. And after asking them a lot of questions, and not the thing about trauma too for me, not only as a therapist, but just as a person, is to have no point of view about whatever the story is that surrounds the kid. So whatever the traumatic event was, whatever that story was. And I was just fascinated at how he couldn't like let go of it. And I was wondering what it was that was keeping it in place. And it turns out that his dad had committed suicide 3 or 4 years before, and nobody told him that his dad had actually committed suicide. And there was a sort of aura of speculation around whether it was a legitimate car accident or whether his dad actually ran the car off the cliff, right? But apparently this little guy had grown up looking exactly like his dad, like they couldn't tell baby pictures apart who was who. And he'd sort of taken on the identity of his dad. And when I asked him the question, what if you didn't have to, just because you look like your dad, what if that doesn't mean that you're the same as your dad, right? What if you're a completely different person that can make different choices and have a completely different life? And he turned around, he swung around, because he had his back to me. He swung around, he made eye contact with me, and he said, "Really?" Right? Mm. And it was just this idea that, I mean, that the traumatic event for him was thinking that somehow, because he was his dad, he was going to have to kill himself at some point, and sort of and I think that was something that was sort of seeped through the family. So I guess, you know, that story is traumatic events can be either chronic or acute. There can be like a car accident or an explosion or a death of a loved one or something like that, which would be an acute event. And then there's the trauma that occurs over time. That's like the slow drip, right? That's like that, like the points of view that people have about you, about your kids, that it gets infused into your very being, if you will, and takes you away from who you actually are. And so a lot of the work that I do with kids is asking them questions so that they can see what actually is, as opposed to what they've either been led to believe or been told is true that actually isn't, or whatever, right?
Yeah, so how does you having no point of view, how does that change what shows up for a kid in their
Yeah, that's a great question. So you notice the difference in energy between, oh, my God, that is so awful. I can't believe that. Oh, right? That.
Mm-hmm.
And huh. Or aw. Right? So kids mimic their surroundings. They mimic the people who are significant to them. They do it for a variety of reasons. They do it to fit in, or they do it in protest. They do it to make other people feel better. Many kids are healers, and they'll do it like a child who is depressed oftentimes will take on the depression in an attempt to heal the depressed parent, the parent who's depressed, or in an attempt to connect with the parent who is depressed, because the depressed parent can't connect any other way except through the depression, you know, like that kind of stuff. And I don't know about you, but anytime somebody has a point of view about what I should or shouldn't do, I don't typically do it. I'm one of the rebels, right? You want me to do that? Uh-uh. My mom said that learning the meaning of the word no added a joy and spice to my life that had been absent up until then, right? And I think I'm pretty typical of like most kids, even the ones who claim to, even the ones who pretend to want to do everything that you want them to do this, right? Yeah. And so what happens, I can't use my hands to describe it, but if your child is having trouble with a friend at school or with a teacher, whatever, and you intervene, you take away the possibility that they can actually work through and sort it out on their own, whatever it is that's going on. And then you become the problem, right? That's what points of view do for people. They insert you in places where you create more chaos, not less, right?
Yeah, and I even remember having points of view about my relationship with my sisters growing up, and to me, it was some degree of trauma. And when I let go of my points of view, I remember one day thinking to myself, wow, I don't feel that way anymore. Like, I couldn't even get how I could have looked at it that way at any point, you know. It was just so different when I let go of my point of view around it. So that can be in a big, like you said, the acute trauma, or even just these little things that we carry with us through our lifetime.
Right. So can I tell you, I want to tell another story that may of illustrate this. You know, when kids have been traumatized, oftentimes they're made into victims. Oh, my God, mm-hmm. this poor child, look at what happened to them. Right? That? So I worked with a little guy. He was 5 when I first met him, and I think he's 9 now, maybe 10. And I haven't seen him in over 2 years. And he has a dad who is really one of the meanest, most self-absorbed, sort of narcissistic people I've ever met. And really was mean to this kid all the time. And the divorce was conflicted. There were restraining orders. And the dad kept on, like all narcissists do, making everybody else wrong, and especially the kid's mom. And one of the things that the mom had begun to create with this little boy was that the little boy was, in an attempt to prove the wrongness of the dad, she used the little boy as an example of how mean he was, right? Look, he's a victim. He can't do this. He can't do that. And I had it when, after they first started coming in, I had a conversation with her, and I asked her, if she would be, if she, if that's what she wanted to create, if she wanted to create her son as a victim, or if she was willing to work with me around empowering him to so that he could handle his dad, right? And and you know, and to most people, the way his dad was traumatic. It was, he was so mean, and she was startled, and she said, yes. So here's an example. He would come in, and he was so cute. He would come in, and this was maybe when he was seven, and he would sit in the chair, as opposed to playing with the toys instantly, and he would lock eyes with me, and he would tell me a story about something that had happened to him. And he came in one day, and he said, my dad was really mean to me. And I said, right. So tell me what happened. And he said, well, he yelled at me when I tried to make my bed. And I said, well, can you give me a little more information? And I said, what was that? And he said, well, it was in the morning, and he was in the car, and he yelled at me when I was making the bed. And I said, okay, so can I ask you a question? He said, yeah. And I said, does your dad, so we had already established the fact that his dad was mean, right? Like in one of the very first sessions, just one of the ways of working with kids is to acknowledge what is without a point of view. And so I didn't have a point of view about the fact that his dad is mean. His dad is mean. It's not a judgment. It's not being mean or dishonoring to say that. He is just mean. And to pretend that he's not, or to pretend that he's something that he's not, is dishonoring of the child, of the parents, of the process, of everybody, right? So point in fact, he's a lot of times he's mean. And so we'd already established that. And I said, so tell me about making your bed in the morning. Tell me about your dad and making your bed. What does your dad say about beds, meaning about beds being made? And he said, well, I'm supposed to make my bed before I go to school. And I said, so sometimes you get busy and you forget to make it? And he looked at me and he said, yeah. And I said, so what happened that day that your dad was yelling at you from the car and you were making your bed? And he said, well, I forgot and I wanted to make it before I got in the car. And I said, was the choice that you had either to get yelled at by your dad who was waiting for you in the car because you were keeping him, making him be late, and the other choice was that you would get yelled at when you got home because you hadn't made it? And he said, yes. And I said, right. So is making your bed a big deal for your dad? And he said, yes. And I said, so what can you do different? Like knowing that, what can you do different? And he said, well, I could make my bed when I wake up in the morning. I said, yeah. Is there like anything else you could do? And he said, well, yeah, I could make it, just remember to make it before I go. And like that, right? I had no point of view about it. The other thing that I got was that he could create himself as a victim, or he could create himself who is capable of handling his dad. And when I offered him those, I said, the other thing is you could not make your bed, right? And he said, yeah. And I always included those choices for him to be a victim in, as well as the choices for him to not be a victim. And he always chose to not be a victim. And the cool thing about it was, like a couple of years later when they went back to court again, his dad really pulled some outrageous stunts that he actually had the language and was able to describe to the evaluators and stuff like that. And he really, by not making himself be a victim, by allowing himself to be present and to see how he could change situations and not trigger his dad's anger all the time, he really was able to create a different future for himself and for his sister by articulating all of that to the evaluator, who actually heard him and the judge heard him, and that's what was agreed upon. And so I get that that's a long story, but about trauma, if I had bought into the story of his mom that he actually was a victim, could he have ever created that for himself?
No, and it's just so empowering to him in not only this situation, but into the future of creating his life, how he wants to have it. He's got these new skills.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
And And
exactly.
What I'm hearing is that there's a huge difference between acknowledging what is, so you can acknowledge that the dad was mean and not judge it at the same time.
Yeah, not have
and
a point of view.
And that's what actually changes it for the kid.
It really does. I get that what it does is it provides a space for him to have choices besides my dad's mean, therefore I'm a victim. Right?
Cool.
That's amazing. Yeah, it really is. It really is. And the thing that I love, you know, Chris, you and I and everybody on the school staff, I love kids. And one of the many things that I love about them is their willingness to drop this stuff, right? When they're offered a different possibility besides whatever the, whatever they've been told that they know actually isn't true or they know doesn't actually work.
I was just thinking about other stories I've heard you tell that are really, you know, horrific kind of situations for the kids, and how you having no point of view and facilitating them to express and to tell you what they do know about a situation, and
yeah.
you having no point of view about it just completely changed how the kid was showing up. And I think of the little girl who was living with her grandma and slept with her grandma all the time because of a situation where her mother was murdered, and how you looking, you know, asking her questions about what she knew just changed everything for her, for school, in school
yeah.
and at home, and it's
yeah.
such a drastic change.
It was huge. That was a long time ago. And she went from, and really what I did was I empowered her grandma to ask her the question. Like I worked, that's a lot of the work I do as well. I work with the kids, and I also work really closely with the parents or the caregivers, the guardians, so that to empower them so that they don't have to be in therapy all the time. Right. And this grandma was the one who asked the little girl what she actually knew, and the little girl told her in 4-year-old language what the ex-boyfriend had said he was going to do, and what was driving her acting out behaviors was the fear that this guy was going to come and get her. And the grandma thought she was too young to know any of the details, so everybody was trying to keep secret from this little girl what had actually happened. And what the grandma found out by just asking this simple question, all right, so here's a tool for you guys. Like my favorite is to ask kids, what do you know? Right? And they have no point of view about what they say. And when the grandma finally asked the little girl, what do you know? Because the little girl was asking grandma why her mom died. And nobody ever answered her directly. They all made up a bunch of stuff and told her all these stories that the little girl knew were lies. And so then when the little girl asked her again, the grandma said, so what do you know? And she told her detail by detail what the ex-boyfriend had said. And when the grandma said what he did was very bad and the judge locked him up in a jail that he can never get out of, this guy was sentenced to, I think, 6.5 consecutive life sentences. And then in addition to that, like 64 more years added on top. So there's no way he's going to get out in this lifetime. And the grandma said the judge made sure that he could never get out and he could never come and find you. He's gone. You don't have to worry about that anymore. And that night, the little girl slept on her side of the bed, not wrapped around grandma. And within 2 weeks, she was back in her own bedroom. And, you know, 4 years later, she's riding horses, she's a gymnast, she's doing all kinds of stuff. I get periodic updates from them. That's one of the fun things about my job, is that I love hearing from parents about their kids and how they're doing later. But yeah, what do you know, right? Great question.
Yeah, because we often assume that they don't know, or we have to hide things to protect them. and
they're too young. There's this sense that a, quote, traumatic event, end quote, is information and material that's too adult for kids. And that's just one of the biggest lies, I think, that we perpetrate on ourselves and or that are perpetrated on us and on kids. It's just simply not true. And it's not that you need to tell kids unnecessary details, but when you ask kids, what do you know, it creates space for them and for you to have a conversation about what they actually do know and for you to be able to, you know, go from there, like start from what they know and move on from there.
Cool.
So cool. Wow. It's a great topic. How many more minutes do we have?
Yeah. We have five more minutes. So is there anything else you want to say about trauma?
Well, I was wondering about, since this is the school topic, talking about kids who've been traumatized and are in school. As a teacher, do you have any questions for me, or do you, typically come in with diagnoses of post-traumatic stress disorder or reactive attachment disorder or separation anxiety or whatever like that.
Yeah, so what you said that you work with parents very closely when you work with kids, so what's one tool that you give parents that can create change for them and for their kids?
Well, that one, to ask, what does your child know? One of the things, and I don't mean to discount trauma. There are traumatic events that happen, like a lot of traumatic events. And one of the things that happens is that the trauma is stored in your body, right? And so, I don't know, does that make sense?
Does that show up when you say trauma is stored in your body? So
how do you release it?
Okay. So releasing
quick,
it using the tools?
So quick story. Little guy had both acute and chronic stomach aches. So the acute part was that he had them, they were debilitating, and he had them 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 times a day. The chronic part was that they'd been going on for over a year, and the parents had taken them to multiple doctors, like that kind of stuff. And so the trauma that he experienced was the horrific level of fighting that went on between his parents, just huge amounts of fighting. And he stored it in his stomach, which is where the dad, a long story short, that's where the dad stored his trauma. And so when I asked the little guy, do you know anybody else whose tummy hurts like yours, he acknowledged that his dad did. And then another series of questions, he said he acknowledged that he was trying to take his dad's tummy aches away so that his dad would feel better. And so when I asked him if he could leave the tummy aches with his daddy so his daddy could work through whatever he needed to work through, he sort of looked at me. And then I taught him a couple of different things that he could do, different ways to touch his body. But I think that what was so powerful about that session was that he got to experience two things. One is that loving his daddy didn't mean that he had to take his tummy aches away from him. And the other one was that he could actually heal himself, right, by touching his body and by putting his hands on his stomach and asking his body basically to heal. It's really sort of basic stuff. And he did. He stopped going to the doctors. He stopped having the stomach aches like that. One of the really comforting ways that adults can, for kids who've been either abused or have been traumatized to still exhibit the physical or like the symptoms of it, is to curl up with them and hold them like they're a baby, right? And just like that nurturing care. And you have to do it with no point of view, though. If you do it with, oh, my poor baby, or, oh, this poor child, but then don't do it. But if you can do it clean with no point of view about what occurred for them and just be that space where you don't judge them as a victim, where you don't have the point of view about anything, where your only point of view is just to be space for them so that they can heal however they choose to heal, not the way you think they should or the way the experts tell them that they should, but the way they choose to, that's an amazing gift that you can be for kids who've been traumatized. There's no point of view, and create the space for them both energetically and then physically to heal.
Wow. Well, thank you, Anne, so much. This has been a wealth of information and tools, and I think we could go on and on and on. But our time is up. So thanks for sharing all of this. And where can people get more information about what you do? And if they wanted to contact you, how would they do that?
The best way to do that is to go to my I have a webpage on, so go to www.annemaxwell.accessconsciousness.com. And that's actually the best way to contact me right now. You asked me in between websites. My old one got taken down. I haven't created the new one yet. So that's the best way to get all of my contact information.
Okay,
so thanks
terrific.
For asking.
Thank you. And if anyone would like more information about the school, the website for the school is accesspossibilitiesschool.com. Our school offers full-time programs for kids K through 12. We have extracurricular activities. We also offer part-time. So if kids want to register for a class or more than one class, they can do that. We offer tutoring. We also offer adult classes, and all the information is at accesspossibilitiesschool.com. Thank you all for joining us. Thank you again, Anne, for sharing all your expertise and for being a gift to kids that you are.
And thank you, Christine. Grateful for everybody. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.